This is All Things Git, the podcast about Git. I'm Edward Thompson.
I'm Martin Woodward.
Martin!
It's good to be back.
I'm so glad to have you back.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, where have you been?
Oh, wherever haven't I been? So, no, you've been doing a great job with the show. We've had some really good guests on. So, yeah, but I heard our guest today and I could not let this one go by, so I had to make it. So thanks very much for doing this one.
Yeah, it's true. You've missed a lot. We've talked about Git GUI clients like Tower and GitKraken. We've talked about GitHub Universe. We've talked about how to learn and teach Git. And we've even talked about how to start hacking on Git itself. And yeah, they were all great shows. But yeah, I'm excited about this one today, too. Who's joining us today, Martin?
So today we have Johannes Schindelin, who we all know, we've known for a while. He maintains Git for Windows. Johannes used to be a number theorist, a geneticist, and a science image processing expert, so brainy. He now works at Microsoft as a colleague of ours and spends most of his time trying to improve the Git for Windows user experience. So, hey, welcome, Johannes.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So how are you finding things at Microsoft? First of all, you've been here a little while now. Do you feel like you've had the chip implanted and everything? Do you feel suitably Microsoft-y?
Yeah, well, the implantation, that was a little bit painful. But the scars are all healed now. No, seriously, again, I really like it. I like it a lot, especially since I came from the scientific world. And if you ever knew somebody in the scientific world, they basically work from 1 year to 2 year contracts. And I like the job security with working at Microsoft. That's for sure. Now I don't have to worry all that much and I can really focus on working. So, and I'm embedded in a fantastic team. It's the best team I ever worked with. And I have a fantastic manager. And yeah, I really like it.
Who'd have thought you'd have job security at Microsoft working on open source, eh? How times have changed. So when did you, so you've been working on Git for Windows as long as I've known you. So when did you first actually start developing Git for Windows? What's the kind of the history of the project? When did you get involved? All that sort of thing.
So I got involved with Git pretty early on. But back then I was safely on Linux. I switched to Linux from Windows actually in 1994. So it's a long time on Linux. And then eventually in 2006, I worked in a company on refactoring some Windows software. And so obviously I was on Windows there. And I wanted to use Git too, instead of their what their idea of a version control system was.
What was their idea of a version control system?
I'd rather not say.
Nope.
Because I don't want...
Let's hear it.
Okay. I'd rather not say because, quite honestly, I forgot the exact name of it. But it had a T in it, and it was written in Java, and I could hack it. Because everybody kind of hacked Java. And so I could make it do things that I want to do, but it was super slow.
Huh.
So I could do all kinds of stuff, including overriding the lock of a colleague who went on vacation. It was really fun, but Git is so much faster than that hog of a CPU.
So your first interaction building version control systems was actually decompiling a Java version control system and mucking with it.
No, that was, I actually already had contributed to Git 2 years before that. But it certainly helped to know the concepts in order to understand what those class names probably would mean. And then a little bit decompiling and everything came together.
Had you ever used any non-distributed version control tools before the job? You know, you mentioned you're using Git. Had you used any like, you know, CVS or Subversion and things like that beforehand? Or had it always been with a distributed version draw at Git or Mercurial?
No, it was actually in my first job, I worked with SourceSafe.
Yay!
Yeah. So it has its advantages and disadvantages, right? But at least with SourceSafe, I never lost anything important.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. Maybe I'm special in that way. But with CVS, I did tons of stuff.
So, huh.
With CVS, at some stage, the server crashed and we couldn't recover the hard disk. In another case, somebody helpfully reformatted it.
That is helpful.
Yeah, it's very helpful. We could actually start
advantage of SourceSafe is there's no server involved, you know, just a file system. So, hey,
exactly.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
So that's right. It corrupts itself.
that's an advantage there. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I had worked with CVS a lot, for example, on some scientific software I started to develop in 2001. And then eventually I wanted to switch from CVS to Subversion and was still trying to find a good tool to convert the history, the complete CVS history of what I developed for other scientists. And while I was searching, Git came along. Mm. So I switched to Git.
So you were going to switch from CVS to Subversion. You just scrapped Subversion entirely and moved all the way to Git.
Exactly.
Huh, cool.
How did your team react to that?
You mean the entire developer team back then?
Or was that you?
Yeah, that was me. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
So they reacted positively.
Again, advantage of doing science.
I was working with other scientists, and I actually got them lured into learning how to do some scripting. And I constantly get these thank you mails every 2 or 3 months from my then colleague who said, you know, without you, I wouldn't have my current job because it consists of scripting and everybody thinks what I do is magic and all I do is employ what you taught me back then in 2001. So that was cool, but he did not really develop software in higher languages, just shell scripting or a little Tickle scripting here and there because the software we used back then had Tickle as its scripting language. But yeah, I mean, the entire development team, that was me, but it was really helpful to already then have a version control system. And yeah, I mean, I switched to Git mainly because it made everything a little bit more robust for myself. The server was out of the equation. I could back up stuff on a hard disk or a USB thumb drive and be sure that I can replay it back in case the principal server would go down.
And so when did you actually, so that was your first experience with Git on Windows. When did you get involved with the Git for Windows project then?
So actually in that job in 2006, when I was working on Windows, I used Cygwin Git, obviously, because that was the only Git that you could have on Windows back then.
Tell me what Cygwin Git is.
Cygwin is the system on Windows that tries to emulate POSIX functionality. Now that sounds a little bit low level. So let me put it into different terms. Software that was written for Linux cannot easily compile on Windows. And with Cygwin, you can't pretend that you compile for Linux, but you compile on Windows. And there's the software library that does everything in between to emulate whatever's missing or whatever's different.
And this was way, way, way before the Windows subsystem for Linux days and things like that. We're talking, you know, decades ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Cygwin was, I think, invented in the late 90s, 98, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it comes at a performance price. You run the software and it's just way slower than it needs to be. And back in the day, I found that there was a project called MingW, Minimal GNU System for Windows, where you could use the GNU C compiler to compile stuff for Windows without that Cygwin runtime that emulates Linux. And obviously, the product of that compiling, that's much faster on Windows. And I wanted that speed for Git. So I started mucking with Git's source code to get it to compile with this MingW system. And I got it to run mostly, but it would not. So for example, if you run git log on the command line, it should give you a commit history, right?
Sure.
And it should stop after the first page. Well, it didn't. It did not. It just ran all the way through until the bitter end. And so I tried to fix that, and eventually my job at the company with this Windows software ran out, and I stopped. And I just put that stuff that I had, all of those patches, in a semi-cleaned-up version onto a public Git repository, and sent a mail to the Git mailing list. Hey, this is something that I started, but it's up for grabs now because I don't have access to a Windows machine anymore. So that was really my first encounter with the Git for Windows project. It was way before it was called Git for Windows.
Wait, what was it called then?
It was just the patches to get Git compiled with MingW, which says nothing to a person who's now a C developer.
Right, right. That's true. So something I hear a lot is the term msysgit.
Yep.
So tell me, what's the difference between msysgit and Git for Windows?
Okay. So first of all, I'm very sorry. I invented that term msysgit, and it was a mistake. I'm really sorry.
Oh, no.
You can't blame me all you want for it. It was a stupid name. It didn't describe. So msys, basically, if you want to compile anything for MingW, what you want to have as somebody who's really used to Linux is your bash. And the bash is actually not MingW. The bash is still something that uses a sort of minimal version of Cygwin.
Okay.
And that's msys. So msys was invented merely to run a bash with which you then could compile stuff against MingW to produce clear, clean Windows software.
And that's great, except that Git itself is a bunch of bash scripts too. So does that mean that you need msys to make Git for Windows go?
That's exactly right. So back then, msysgit was invented as the development system. And I actually didn't invent this in 2006. It was way later. That was in 2007, where I bundled all this up and put it onto GitHub in the msysgit org. So this is a Git repository that contains no source code, but only binaries. The entire set of binaries that you need to compile Git on Windows. So msysgit is the development environment of Git for Windows. If you will, it's the Git for Windows SDK.
I see.
Right? So msysgit was not Git for Windows. Msysgit was needed to produce Git for Windows.
So when I actually just launch, you know, the Git bash shell on my Windows machine when I'm using Windows, I'm actually using Git for Windows. I'm not using msysgit, even though like a lot of people seem to call it that. That's not really correct. It's called Git for Windows. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, Git for Windows, to make it even more complicated, is basically a subset of files of this Git for Windows SDK. It's a subset of files that you need to run Git for Windows. So it excludes everything that you need to build it, and it includes everything that you need to run it.
But as far as the listeners are concerned, if you download Git for Windows, you can run Git for Windows. But I presume then if you want to help actually send a patch and contribute to Git for Windows, then you need to install a bunch of other stuff. And there's instructions to do that on the project. Is that right?
Precisely.
Cool. So what's the relationship between the core Git project and Git for Windows then? Because it's not it's a separate project, isn't it? But it's very, very tightly related.
Yeah. Well, it is separate, not out of design. Back in 2006, when I worked on those patches, or was it 2004? I probably mixed it all up. But anyway, who cares? My original intent was to get those patches directly into Git, and then everybody who wanted to could compile Git for Windows themselves. Of course, that's not really working, but back then I was naive enough to think it would work. It's not working because Git users do not want to build it themselves. They want to use it. They want to download a software that's pre-built, and that is the main reason why it's a separate project, so that we have a place where downloads can happen off binaries, because there's no such thing for core Git. For core Git, there are a bunch of repositories and some stuff is hosted on GitHub, but it's not really happening there. The main development is happening on a mailing list of all things, but it doesn't have the facilities to provide downloadable binaries. And so that's why Git for Windows exists. Now, in Git for Windows, there are a lot of patches that did not yet make it into core Git. Part of it is there are just so many. Part of it is that I really want them to become stable first, and stabilizing for me means that we use it in the software Git for Windows, and users help us to make it better. And when they're when they're done, when I have the feeling they're stable enough, then I contribute them to the Git mailing list. And more often than not, the reviews there are, sometimes you could call them entertaining. So then the real work starts, so to say, because then I have to defend certain design decisions. I have to fend off unreasonable requests, which there are a lot of. And I have to implement reasonable requests, which there are too. And the problem with the latter is then I change the original patches that were really battle-tested in Git for Windows and that proved for years that they work. And now I change them. And it did happen that I changed them so much that bugs were introduced. And the worst part for me about that is that it was in response to code review, which in my mind should actually accomplish the opposite. So that's why I'm very careful when and how much I move from Git for Windows, from those patches that are not yet in core Git to core Git, because I need a lot of time to contribute those patches.
Interesting. So Git for Windows is really, so it's not just the development environment that produces the binaries. It's also an actual fork of Git itself. It's not, it doesn't track it exactly one-to-one.
Absolutely. Git for Windows is a fork, but it's what I would like to call a friendly fork.
Sure.
A friendly fork means that it's synchronized very often. So basically, whenever Git has a new release, for a specific narrow definition of a new release, because I only track the newest version, Git has several stable branches. So there's not only 2.16.1, which is the currently latest version. There's also a 2.15.2 or something, and there's a 2.14 line, and there's a 2.13 line, and all those are still maintained. And Git for Windows, to protect my time, I really only track the newest one. And so whenever a new Git version comes out of the newest release line, Git for Windows patches are rebased. So basically, they are replayed on top of the newest Git version. So in that sense, it's synchronized very often. And we use a very special construct there. So everybody who knows this war about merge versus rebase, what's better, knows that rebasing comes with advantages and disadvantages. And I try to overcome this by rebasing and then doing a fake merge of the previous history so that I have both. I have the merge and I have a rebase.
Whoa.
So I have clean patches on top of core Git, but I also still in the commit history have everything that came before in Git for Windows. We don't lose anything.
Wow, that's quite a workflow. I'm trying to imagine it.
It's a lot of work. I know that's not easy.
Well, I have scripting to do that. So I read on Twitter something recently. I think it was Jesse Frizzell who said, good companies will hire people who automate themselves out of their job. And then they'll make them do it again and again and again. So basically, what I'm trying to do with Git for Windows these days is really automate the hell out of it so that I don't have to spend so much time on maintaining. Because maintaining, let's face it, maintaining is important, but it's not fun. It's a lot of work. And for example, for this merging rebase, where I rebase and also do the merge, I have a script that does that for me. So that still takes time, but it doesn't take my time. It takes the computer's time.
So is it fun working on Git for Windows? I mean, like, you know, it sounds like a lot of keeping up with core Git and then, you know, making sure things are working really well on Windows that don't necessarily, you know, are not easy to do when it's with software that's been written for a POSIX file system.
Right. So is it fun? Yes and no. So there are definitely parts I enjoy a lot about developing and maintaining Git for Windows. And there are also parts that are just plain tedious. And I do them because they have to be done. And I somehow got stuck with a responsibility because it was not my plan to maintain Git for Windows. I tried so hard and so often to shed that responsibility and dump it on somebody else. And partially it worked. There was for a couple of months, I think even half a year, there was a real Git for Windows maintainer that was not me. But then he went onto a 1 or 2 month vacation to New Zealand, and apparently he never came back or something.
It's funny how that happens in open source.
Exactly.
Well, you know, life keeps kicking in occasionally, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it is. You do get stuck with things sometimes.
So yeah, I mean, it's you get stuck with things, but of course, this also got me this really awesome job at Microsoft. So it definitely had very positive effects on my life. There are really a lot of fun parts, I have to say. Martin, you said that this keeping up to date and playing catch up with CoreKit is actually exciting. It's really exciting because it's so much, it's so fast. The development of Git didn't slow down. You might think, well, now it's basically done, right? No, it's not at all done. People come up with these crazy ideas all the time that turn out not to be crazy, but really great. And it's fun to incorporate that into Git for Windows and also to try to make it work better with Git for Windows. So last year, some people together with me worked on trying to get continuous testing into CoreKit, where everything that enters CoreKit is tested automatically, not only on Linux, because that's what everybody tests on the Git mailing list, but also macOS and Windows. And so we now catch bugs much, much earlier in the process, which means also that they can be fixed much, much better because the memory is still fresh, what this and that does. And if it doesn't do this on Windows, I probably need to fix that in this way, right? So that's really exciting. And then there are also these bug reports that basically say, this isn't working, it hangs, with literally no other information whatsoever. And that's just frustrating because I don't want Git for Windows to be buggy. I really want it to be very usable. That's my aim with this project. And then somebody spends some time to report a bug and doesn't spend enough time to make it a report that helps me fix it or even understand what's going wrong. So that's frustrating. But then on the same bug tracker, I get these, hey, this is not working because that and that and that. And I have the feeling that they really know what they're talking about. And they probably even look at the source code and say, how about contributing a fix? You can make a pull request because the mailing list, everybody who knows me a little bit on the mailing list knows that I don't think mailing lists are an appropriate vehicle for software development. So it's very hard in my mind to get patches onto the mailing list because there's white space. They're reformatted by your mailing program. And obviously the Git mailing list doesn't like that because then they can't apply those patches. So I offer these people on the Git for Windows bug tracker, if you contribute a pull request to Git for Windows, I will get it upstream. And they turn around next day, I have a beautiful pull request ready to contribute to the Git mailing list. Oh, that's just fun. That's really fun because I see how a little bit of my knowledge helps them to get stuff they need to. And so I spend basically just 20% of my time on those really easy things. They're easy for me. And they spend 20% of their time to do what's easy for them. We all win.
Oh, that's really cool. So I think it's interesting that you act as sort of a manual proxy between sort of modern open source workflows on GitHub with pull requests and that sort of thing. And mailing list, patches on a mailing list. I appreciate that you do that for the community, but it feels like that shouldn't scale.
Yeah, I mean, it would scale if it was more than just myself.
Sure.
Right now, I don't have to scale because I get maybe one or two contributions per month. Actually, I shouldn't say that because last week I got two. So it's fluctuating and hopefully it will become more. At that stage, I would love for somebody else in the community to step up and say, hey, I'll take this pull request and I'll get this upstream to CoreKit. But at the moment, it doesn't need to scale.
Cool.
At the moment, I'll gladly do this because I really enjoy this.
Oh, that's awesome. So you said that was like 20% of your time was sort of bringing these pull requests up to the mailing list. How much time do you actually spend working on Git for Windows versus working on, I don't know, other weird Microsoft things?
So this is where the fun working at Microsoft starts really to show. Because I did Git for Windows for a long time, from 2007 essentially until 2015, without getting paid for it. So I could not really afford to work on it any serious amount of time. I spent then maybe 20 hours a month. And now I can spend something like, yeah, I would say 30 hours, 40, sometimes 50 hours per week on Git for Windows. And of course, I have to do a couple of other things. Some of them will become public. Some of them will probably never become public because they're just internal services. I help my colleagues to design or improve workflows, for example. That's something I'll gladly do. But I really have a lot of time to take care of Git for Windows now. And that I would like to believe that it really improved the user experience a lot, because that's what I'm really interested in. Whenever I read something on Twitter or wherever, when somebody says, hey, Git for Windows, I needed to work on Windows, I installed Git for Windows, it just works. That's great. That makes me happy, because it means I really did the right thing and it worked. And now I can be even proud that my employer supports this.
There's a couple of things you did recently as well, like the supporting Git update, you know, to get a latest version of Git, or making it more obvious to the user when they're installing Git to like use Visual Studio Code or Notepad++ or some GUI editor rather than, you know, Vim and getting stuck in Vim and things like that. So right. You know, you've been slowly sort of chipping away there, as well as keeping up with Git, of trying to make it more, the experience more native to Windows people.
Right, right. So what you mentioned last, this editor thing, and actually that was a pain point for me for years. I think I came up with the idea in 2014 that, hey, why shouldn't the installer actually let Windows users specify a Windows editor? Because the default editor is Vim, and Vim...
What's wrong with Vim? Yeah,
I mean, I actually like Vim, but I think I'm probably the only one, you know, but I think that's because we all come from Unix backgrounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, escape, you know, it perfectly made sense to me. Colon X, yeah, what's wrong with that? But I know Scott Hanselman has many. Vim has provided him with many hours of good material for on stage, you know. So.
Well, I mean, that's just relative to the amount of hours he's spent trying to get out of it.
Right. Yeah, it's the modern escape room, right?
That's right.
Vim, I mean, I can use it. I originally was an Emacs person, and I switched to Vim only because I had to work in a job where
you had a limited amount of RAM.
Yeah, that too. So I couldn't install the Emacs operating system, right?
Yeah, Vim was on everything, whereas like Solaris and AIX, right, and things with really early versions, they always had Vim. So, well, they, you know, Vi, and not even Vim, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Vi is still not very good, right? I always used Vim when I could, because it really improved things. But yeah, I switched to Vim, and over the course of the years, I learned muscle memory that just makes a couple of things fast. But I shouldn't say that I'm a Vim expert, because whenever I see somebody really, really know the heck out of their tool, operate Vim, I'm in awe. It's just magic. And I'm definitely not that person. But I can see how somebody who is used to something like having menus and being operatable with a mouse, where you could even select text with your own mouse, would then say, what is this? The 1970s called and want their editor back.
Most of the people we're coding with now never even knew that editors like that existed, you know? Anyway, what do you mean I can't just press backspace? You know, this is crazy, so.
Yeah, and moving the cursor with HJKL. And what is up? Which one is up and which one is down, right? No, I mean, I see, I know the problems. And so in 2014, we mused, a colleague and I, back in my science job, how cool it would be to just select Notepad++, for example. And I put it on the Git for Windows bug tracker in 2015, I think. And finally, I got around to implement something late last year. And then I even got contributions to add more editors. And those contributions really make me happy, because then I have the impression that I put in a seedling and it really blossoms to a full tree, and it's really awesome to see.
So that's a good question. You know, you mentioned contributions and things and getting pull requests. How do you try and encourage contribution to the project? That's something me and Ed have both struggled with our own open source projects and making, you know, trying to make them welcoming.
Right. I mean, I don't have a really stellar reputation for that because I often come over as gruff, and I apologize for that. It's just sometimes I have so much to do that I don't even get to read the Git mailing list. And then I try to answer somebody's issue, and I'm probably too tense, too short, too terse. And then I come over as completely impolite and not appreciating that people spend time to report something or to ask for something. And I'm really unhappy when I come over as impolite and as unfriendly, because I want this project to be a fun place out of a purely selfish reason, because I spend such a lot of time with that project. I want it to be fun. And if it's fun for others, it's fun for me too, right? So I really try to improve also what some people call the soft skills, which I would actually call the hard skills, because anybody can be taught to develop software. Maybe not really excellent software, but decent enough. Anybody can learn that in years, but to work together, that is a whole next level of skill that you have to learn too. And some people don't even spend the time, and I try to spend a lot of time on that to improve how I communicate with people, how I encourage them despite thinking that they didn't quite provide what I need of them, right? So if I get a bug report that says Git hangs, I open Git bash and it just hangs, then I'm very sympathetic to the situation. But if I don't even know which Git for Windows versions that is, it really makes it hard for me to understand where the problem may come from. And sometimes I then ask, so which Git for Windows version is that? And it comes back with 1.9.5, which is like 3 years old. And it's this MSys Git based thing that's no longer maintained even. At least then I know what to suggest. Please try to upgrade to 2.16.1. And then the problem might just go away. But I really try to strike the balance between encouraging people and not pissing them off, if you will.
It's why things like the, you know, we've got Git merge coming up soon. And right. It's why things like that are so important for the Git committers to get together and meet each other. Because, you know, when you work with in open source project, it is very easy to just get annoyed with people. I don't know, Ed's had some experiences with that early on in the Git space. But when you meet everybody and get to know everybody, actually, they're all generally pretty cool, you know, and you get to hear their voice a lot better in the response that's come back to a PR or a patch, and it makes right. more sense to you. It doesn't come across as gruff as maybe it came across in ASCII, you know.
So. Right. I found that too. So the first time that I actually met some Git contributors in person was in 2007 at the Google Summer of Code Summit. And it was really nice to put, as you say, the voices and also the faces to the people with who I communicated. Because let's face it, we're not machines. We're human beings. We're highly social beings. And so it's always nicer to have a human touch in your communication. So that's maybe something that I really miss on the bug tracker. And maybe I should actually, I'm very private about photos of myself. I should probably connect a real photo of myself so that people can see my face. And even if it's not a very nice face, at least it's a human face, and not this equal sign that I have on GitHub right now, which, however, is also very human, because I'm really, this is dear to my heart, the idea of equality and treating other people with respect, especially if they happen to be of the opposite gender or of a different race or of a different age group even. But the equal sign is not very human, so I guess I could improve things there myself.
I know, it's a lot deeper than I thought it was, yeah. So yeah, I'd stick with it. I like it now you've explained it. So
yeah, cool. But you have to explain it. It's
One thing that we've had success with LibGit too, in terms of growing our community, is Slack. We have an open Slack channel that anybody can join. What's the best way to interact with Git for Windows? If I maybe want to contribute, maybe I just want to learn more about it, what's the best way to get started and to find that?
Right. So there's a gitter.im channel. Gitter.im is, as far as I know, an imitation of Slack, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same login thing. It's a lot more tied to your GitHub repo, isn't it? Even though it's owned by the GitLab guys, I think, now, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, but...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it's a IRC, web IRC type system for based around GitHub repos.
Right, so it's a chat room for different projects, and you can even then chat to individual members of the chat room in which you're chatting. And yes, Git for Windows /git is also there, so we have a channel there. I have to admit that sometimes, actually very often, I'm not even there, because when I'm heads down in, say, developing a patch series, then I don't like any interruptions. You can't reach me by email, you can't reach me by chat, you can't reach me by Twitter. I'm just not in this world right now. But other people are there, actually. So this channel, I wouldn't say it's very active, but it's active enough. So if you have a little bit of patience, you can go in there, ask your questions or provide your suggestions. You might even pique my interest if you say, I want to contribute, how do I do this? That's my favorite part in the channel. Then I definitely try to provide you with pointers to the source code that you want to touch and what way, and kind of get you kickstarted with the project so that you don't have to bump your head against so many walls and obstacles. But yeah, we have that. As I said, it's not very active, but I think it's reasonably active. I probably log in there at least every couple of days. Recently, it was every day, and try to answer questions, try to give feedback.
I think that's great. I think I think having a chat room is a really wonderful way to build communities, because, you know, some people do like the mailing list. Some people like interacting on GitHub issues. You know, maybe they can drop something in and then come back very asynchronously. But I think that a lot of people really like sort of the interactive nature of IRC or Gitter or Slack, you know, whatever that is. So that's really cool.
It's been really fascinating being involved in some of the .NET Foundation projects that are more consumer orientated. So, you know, you've got a thing like Open Live Writer, which is very, you know, used by bloggers and things. And it's probably, of the projects I've been involved with, I'm not as involved with it as was, but of the projects I've ever been involved with, it was the one that was most heavily used by non-developers. And there you see people trying to interact with the project through Facebook, like direct messages and things. And,
wow,
you know, all these sorts. Yeah, I know. It's fascinating. And you realize how much of the communication style we use with open source projects is very geared to being, you know, a library that open source people use or a tool that developers use. And so we can use like developer channels for comms and it's fine. But yeah, it's probably why it's so hard to do open source projects that have a big base that are not developers, that don't contribute. Or that don't contribute code anyway. You know, contribute. You have to provide mechanisms to contribute documentation and write about it, because they're all bloggers that use it. Anyway, there you go.
Oh, that's really cool. So I want to come back real quick just to one thing. You guys started talking about Git merge, and
yay.
I think that everybody if you've listened to one of the recent All Things Git episodes, we've talked about Git merge. It's you know, the conference for the Git community. So Johannes, you're part of the Git community. You're a huge part of the Git community. You maintain probably the most used Git client. Are you going to be at Git merge?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'll see you there.
Woo-hoo.
Yes, you'll see me there. Many people will see me there, because a talk was accepted that not even I, but a colleague of mine proposed. And he said, well, Johannes, this is about Git for Windows. You got to talk classic about this. So we do half-half.
That sounds like a classic PM move that I can recognize. So that's a program manager in Microsoft speak. But yeah, that's what I do for a job. What it does.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was it. Not even a program manager, but
was it not? Oh, there you go.
It was Derek Stoley.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, there you are.
So you two are talking about Git for Windows.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about making Git for Windows. And his face is already up on Git Merge. Mine's not yet, basically because I slack a little bit with sending my photo. Stoley is the perfect person to talk about this because he basically came to the project very recently and knows much more about being outside of the Git community and how to get into it recently. Mm. And he also knows a ton about the internals of Git because he tried to accelerate it a lot. So he improved performance and he even blogged about it recently. That was a little bit popular on social media, I hear.
Like went to number one on Reddit. I think we'll put that in the show notes maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he's a jolly nice chap as well. So that always helps. So.
Right.
But yeah, so the Git Merge conference, you were saying, Ed, it's when is it and how do people find out more?
Yeah, it's March 8th. It's going to be in Barcelona this year. It changes locations every year. And you can find out more about it at git-merge.com. So if you want to go and see Johannes and Derek Stoley talk, as well as a number of other great speakers, that's the place to do it.
One thing that Ed said there as well, Johannes, it's got to be pretty cool to sit back and think, how many people are using software you've written? You know, Ed gets to be, you know, quite shockingly frightened at how many people are using his code to merge their pull requests. And you get to sit there and think, wow, you know, not only the whole of the Windows team use your code, but most teams in Microsoft do. Most developers on the Windows operating system now do. That's pretty awesome stroke scary.
Yeah, you know, I don't really think about it too much. Call me naive, but I don't really want to think about it too much.
Probably best for your mental health.
Yeah. Well, it does make me proud, right? So it makes me proud that what I do is useful to people. And when I had a particularly frustrating interaction on the bug tracker, I go back to this one ticket that somebody opened just saying thanks. Because you get so much crap here, just saying thanks. And I keep it open just so I find it every once in a while. And then I go back there to lift me up. And if that still doesn't help, then I go to the download numbers of, I think it was Git for Windows 284, which was also installed as part of Visual Studio if you chose to install Git for Windows. So that is a version that was downloaded quite a lot of numbers. And I think it was something like 3.5 million downloads. So that lifts me up saying, okay, this one person who really seemed to enjoy taking the crap out of me, maybe that's not the most important part of this project. Maybe the most important part of this project is that 3.4999 million did not complain.
Exactly. And I'm incredibly grateful for all the work you do and how much you've done to help Git work better for Windows developers and grateful for you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
I'd also like to say thanks, Johannes, and thank you for listening. If you're interested in Git for Windows, you can check out their gitter.im. We'll have a link in the show notes. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm on Twitter. I'm at E. Thompson, and Martin, he's at Martin Woodward. And of course, you can follow the podcast itself. We're at All Things Git. So thanks again, Johannes, for joining us. And thank you for listening to another episode of All Things Git.